At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com, and not just the Parlay Center, and not just the communications office, but also now the racing office. Walked in, kind of funny, because the building is gone behind the paddock, having been leveled, and things are all ready to go for tonight, but the racing department has been temporarily, apparently until maybe February, until the new building is ready, the new whatever new space they're going to be in. So the racing office right here, able to take in the draws and everything else. We're going to talk to Kevin Kirstein later in the hour. Kevin just ran upstairs to see John Nichols, and looking forward actually to slipping in here maybe earlier tomorrow morning and going up to the fourth floor and see everybody. Unusual opportunity with this September sojourn that continues, presses on the Magical Mystery Tour, and will continue through till back to Erie. For Monday and for Tuesday for the recap. They, in fact, drew the Masters card yesterday at Presque Isle. And if you haven't looked ahead, it's terrific. They got a big, terrific field, and not just for the Masters, the grade two. The mile and the other two stakes and the whole card is excellent. So we'll have something to look forward to as a kind of a weekend coda. And, of course, it's a transitional weekend with Churchill opening tonight. The activity around here, by the way, between Crittenden and Central Avenue, this is going to be mayhem. I was a little surprised at first when I got off on Crittenden and I saw not the full-fledged Derby Oaks weekend barricades, but there were a bunch of sawhorses, and they lined the streets. And then it occurred to me, I mean, I know that there's a concert, there's some sort of a music festival over at Kentucky Kingdom at the Exposition Center. Then as I drove up Central, it popped in my head, there might be a Cardinal football game. Sure enough, they're playing Florida State tomorrow, and I imagine, yeah, that's probably a night game, right? It's got to be a Friday night game. So the Downs opens tonight, the Cardinal game on Friday, the big card here, we're going to talk about the confrontation that has organically developed. Damon's Mound and Echo Again will hook up in the Iroquois. We'll get to that card when KK comes down and get a chance to talk to him. Feels like a very nice start, even without the turf. The three cards look, you know, like this meet. It's a brief meet, obviously, before Keeneland, but it sure looks like it's going to get off to a flying start. And it's kind of interesting because with Kentucky Downs, which we'll talk about in a minute, with Kentucky Downs wrapping up, all turf, and now we've got this meet, which is all dirt. It's kind of an interesting, kind of an oddity, and the horse is getting a bit of a freshening after Saratoga and Colonial and everywhere else they ran during the summer, Ellis Park. So the dirt horses were absolutely ready to fill up the entry boxes for these first three cards, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll draw the Sunday card today. Transitional weekend means also, of course, the start of the action where the Belmont season being run at Aqueduct. And I see plenty of consternation over the, you know, the designation and the idea that, you know, by calling the meet Belmont at Aqueduct, you get the cachet of the Belmont season, essentially. Frankly, I don't know. Frankly, I think time of year means more than, the way the track designation is being done. The winter season at Aqueduct is got a whole different parameter versus the other venues that are open at that time. I don't think that there's any negative connotation that inhibits play and interest in the Aqueduct season. It's just that there's a different landscape when you are looking at your wagering menu. It's a very big difference between looking at, in December and into January, February, where there's, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Fairgrounds, and Oaklawn, and Aqueduct, as opposed to right now, where it doesn't particularly matter. It's New York racing, and it's, you got the same scenario with two expansive turf courses, not as expansive as Belmont's turf course, but pretty nice. The two options at Aqueduct now with the grass course. So I don't know. I guess the statistic, I had kind of other things that were keeping me occupied. And so I guess the initial complaint and concern was over the way in which the statistics were being presented, and that the Aqueduct statistics weren't being reflected necessarily in PPs, but I guess that's been fixed. At least at DRF, I know it has. I can't speak for other people. DRF made the whatever coding adjustments that were necessary. So anyway, Los Al, don't want to miss the Los Al portion of the discussion and the landscape. And of course, if you heard yesterday with Jeff Madej, the conversation that will lead to Canterbury wrapping up, I want to reiterate again that $3,000 buy-in contest today at Canterbury. And ExpressBet and TVG and on-site, the buy-in. And speaking of contests and the opportunity to go to the BCBC in the case of this Big Ten contest that Jeff is presiding over at Canterbury, I mean, this is a unique opportunity. I even if 150 people play to give away 11 seats to BCBC, $10,000 a pop, quite an attractive proposition. So if you didn't hear it yesterday or if you didn't hear it on the replay this morning, you still have time to get involved later at Canterbury. And we'll even get a minute, I'm sure, to glance at the lineup. I've got a little bit of everything here. I've got PPs for Saturday, and of course, in addition to what's happening here at Churchill and the Jockey Club Invitationals at Aqueduct, the Oaks and the Derby for the three-year-olds on the grass, Woodbine Mile Day, Woodbine Mile Day. If you hadn't heard or if you hadn't seen yet, yeah. Quite nice. The terrific card, three grade ones, including the two-year-olds on Saturday. We'll get a chance to glance at those. But the three big venues between the Pocahontas, Iroquois, Locust Grove, and more here, and the Woodbine Mile and the Talma this summer, three grade ones, plus the Seaway, and New York, too. So no shortage. The action never stops, right? Essentially. Few things, and before I look at the, let me clear off a few things. We got sale conversation, obviously, to slip in as well. Another banner day. It's scary, actually. You cannot believe. $28 million sellers in 3 days. And here we are invoking 2007 again, before the economic meltdown.
That was the last time. That's the highest number since the September sale in 2007. $28 million hips. And another into mischief. In this case led yesterday's action, $1.4 million. We'll get a couple of other glances in there as the morning unfolds. I did want to slip in a couple of things I've been carrying around. And number one on that list, didn't get a chance to reach out to David Wolichuk in Cleveland. However, if you didn't notice it last week, a week ago today, actually, at Thistledown, Am a Devil came back from the bleeding episode that saw her expel blood from the nostrils. And she came back on Lasix, easy win in the Michael McKay Memorial, the Anganora Stake. I'm sure a lot of people will say, well, sure, she was back against Ohio types. Okay, that's true, but it wasn't the ease of the competition that necessarily. So happy that she's back running and came back successfully from the incident at Saratoga, where there's no arguing the point about the Lasix. So all right, that gets that in. And I mentioned Jonesboro, right? Yeah, Jonesboro, going to old friends. We're happy about that. And the son of Mom's Command, very cool. So next time we talk to Michael, I'm sure he'll promote. And well, that we can save the, yeah, we can save. We'll be in, of course, next week. We'll be at Philadelphia for the Derby and the Cotillion, and that is shaping up great. We'll save that. I imagine that Dave Grenig is probably, usually Dave comes down for that. I should check with Dave. We'll talk to him tomorrow, actually, ahead of the action. Dave called me while I was at Keeneland. He called me and made me laugh. We'll talk today to Joe Clancy. Joe is on his way to Aqueduct, and the circumstance that finds jump racing returning to Aqueduct for the first time since 1974, and there's quite a bit of amusement about it. We'll also haven't heard back from Bill Gallo, but I know that we'll talk to Bill. All right, so Bill Gallo and Joe Clancy this morning, and in addition, David Hill returns triumphantly. How about David last week, his first week in the New York Times with the NFL analysis? And I did not dig into his he'll tell us what his total was for the week, but for our purposes on these airwaves, Dave was terrific. He went 3-1, and probably learned a lesson picking the Cowboys and taking the points. No, he got the Vikings around, he got the Chargers, and he got the Hawks. And so Dave, 3-1 with his prime plays from the weekend, and of course also James Scully, whose play of the week were the Vikings. One of those many home dogs. And in fact, I did not go back and check on the home dogs. Certainly, you know, I tell you what, now I'm just looking down here from last week. Of course, the Jets, J-E-T-S, bad. The Eagle game, I was able to watch the Eagle game, and we didn't talk to Johnny yet this week, but Eagles did not cover as a road fave, but that's okay. they don't put asterisks in the standings. So, but I think the home dogs did okay, right? I think so. for the most part. Yeah. I'll let David handle this. He's going to join us at 11 for his now regular visits as the New York Times NFL betting analyst. And I'll go to pull up at some point. I'll go to pull up his thing. Okay. Well, I just heard from Joe Clancy. He and Bill Gallo are traveling together, and so they're listening in the car, which is amusing. Thank you. Thanks, guys. All right. So I guess Joe is answering for Bill. They say that the traffic, you really know, for those of you, I'm not even limiting this to the New York metropolitan area. Here in Louisville, we are well past pandemic because traffic levels everywhere you go now are back to, everybody keeps quoting pre-pandemic levels. That includes traffic. Yeah. We're going to also talk this morning in about 5 minutes as I turn my attention to yesterday at Kentucky Downs. And what, I mean, I hope you had fun. I enjoyed it immensely. And I ended up capping, I think, what, 5 of the 7 cards, at least 4. And, it's a mixed bag of success. You'll hit, and you think you got some momentum, and you get stopped. You can't get thrown here. You just have to persevere. You basically get tossed, and then you got to jump right back on. And that's just that, you know, just the way it is. And it's why those multi-race wagers are so attractive, because, you know, first of all, you got these giant fields, and that contributes. As it happens, yesterday, there were a couple of horses that won that broke, at least for me, broke things up. I think you could sense with my comments, I even included the comment on the form to win analysis of the juvenile race. And as it happens, the form to win discounted really good, who was going to be the favorite, and went off at 3-2, and, you know, was really kind of a meek third in here. Reckoning Force and Joseph O'Brien breaks through. And of course, this summer was not productive for the O'Brien team, but Reckoning Force, the Air Force Blue, May Foal, that is a Kentucky bred. So, you know, you would think that a lot of the O'Brien horses are going to have Irish and Britain designations, GBs and IREs. But as it happens, Reckoning Force out of a Jazzle Mare, Alicima. So that's got Shadwell written all over it. But Frankfurt Park Farm bred this colt, and Rosario rode Reckoning Force like he was a winner every step. Ended up, you know, basically holding Deer District safe. It looked like Reckoning Force was just going to inhale Deer District. 10.58 was a nice, I thought that was a pretty nice price on Reckoning Force. I only used Reckoning Force and Really Good. Labor and anybody else, that Castle Knock that came in for Peter Miller, I guess were considerations, but it just felt like Really Good and Reckoning Force were going to get you through, and that came to pass. Speaking of pass, Bill Parcells and Robbie Medina, they win the Gun Runner, and Play Action Pass ran very well in here, and got bet down to 4-1, ended up going off his second choice, and I wanted Fuerte Ventura for Jonathan Thomas, and I thought maybe they were gonna get on by, but Jose Lascano, who came to Kentucky Downs and did very well, rode very well. But Parcells with this 3-year-old and Bill with a couple of stake winners here and some nice 2-year-olds as well. In fact, they tried to win the nightcap That horse did not run well, that letter of gold that, George Weaver sent. But anyway, August Dawn, Bill Parcells, and Robbie Medina, the former longtime Suge assistant, win that Gun Runner. And Alms, how about Alms winning the One Dreamer? And it was funny because Alms ended up going favored, but yet nobody was picking her. It was very funny. And Alms comes to town. Stidham knows what kind of horse, you know, might do well here. And the five-year-old mare in an exciting final stake of the season at Kentucky Downs wins the One Dreamer. So that closed out the stake season. Jose Ortiz aboard for Godolphin. This one, of course, a City Zip mare, now five, and out of the Empire Maker mare, Charity Bell. And Marty McGee sent everybody home a winner. If you looked at Marty's analysis, Hermes, in your daily racing form, Navy Goat. I laughed about the two Navy horses, Navy Fleet, which was the Ivar sibling for Paulo Lobo, and we'll talk about Paulo in a minute, who won a pair of races at Indy yesterday, if you didn't notice that. And Paulo Lobo, he's a problem. let's be honest. He does such a great job. And of course, one earlier broke a maiden as well. So two wins at Indy and a win at Kentucky Downs on closing day. But Navy Goat for Arno Delacour and the Jacksons, and new winner for Army Mule, Hill and Dale's Army Mule, Joel Rosario, who had a very solid season. Not as splashy necessarily as last year when he won all those races in the first few days. But Navy Goat holds on, self-confident, the first-time starter for Suge. And Suge had a very good meet, I think, when it was all said and done. You know, if you win a couple of races at Kentucky Downs and you hit a few boards, it's a good meet. If you look at it that way. And I haven't looked at the final stats, but Navy Goat wins that last race. So the late pick four pays $580 basically, and the late pick five paid $12,000 because of the horse that drew in the eighth race. And I this drives me crazy. Safi Joseph with that Freedom Matters. This is a Stroll gelding in that drew in and went off at 18-1, which was just a crazy price because on paper, Freedom Matters was very competitive in this field. And so you have to go back and kind of reevaluate after these scratches. Quaria Comet, another winner for Paulo. That was the maiden winner, three-year-old, by Shackelford. And I'm pretty sure that's got to be Shackelford's last crop in North America before he moved. And this one for Brownwood Farm under Joe Talamo. Joe Talamo had a nice meet. I think he rode all of Paulo's winners. So that'll do it. Too Many Twizzlers, we were on board. Mark Greer and Arno Delacour. So two wins for Delacour on the day. That Duke of Hazzard, we said, you know, the 10-1 wasn't going to hold, but you got almost 4-1, paid $966, and was confidently handled by Jose Ortiz, and a couple of the other winners early on the card. Mike Maker, of course, because you couldn't run a card without Mike Maker winning a race. How about Oscar Award? That was for Peter Blum, by the way, and of course we talked to his son Josh on Tuesday. Hootie's Racing for John Ortiz. They were excited. They were jumping off the off the hill. Oscar Award, another Oscar performance. The winners are starting to come. Diodoro. How about Diodoro? Sarah Mia for DeLuca and Sons Stable. This English Channel out of Gutierrez Girl that Brian Burns, Mount Joy, bred. And the last winner of the day yesterday, not last of the card, but the Last one we'll mention for Katie Rich, one of their homebreds, an American Faro Filly, two-year-old American Apple, and Gerardo Corrales, who had a very nice meet as well. Chamino and Corrales really distinguished themselves this summer and are making names for themselves. I'll tell you who made a name for himself, and we're going to talk to him shortly. The winner of the King of the Turf. And looking forward to a visit with Tom Rapps. And Casey, let me send you Tom's number because we've not talked to Tom. And this was really, for him, a huge thrill because he's tried some contest play a little bit and has never been to NHC, never qualified for BCBC. So now he's done both. And I imagine that Tom is absolutely thrilled. And of course, as Hammer explained, when it comes to this King of the Turf contest, the 3 days of contests were spread out, and the Sunday card was supposed to be the third card, and it got pushed, as you know. The nine races that were canceled on Sunday got pushed to Tuesday. And, you know, I don't know if you saw this, by the way. A lot of people really were, they were reminded of the old days when, as it happens, Kentucky Downs would run on Mondays and Tuesdays years ago. And some people were calling for more of that, more Tuesday, you know, quiet day Kentucky Downs cards. So we'll see if we'll see what Ted Nicholson and the team, what their thoughts are. But I'm anxious to hear from Tom about how the rescheduling affected him. There were three separate winners of the three contests, but Tom with the overall largest total. And as it happens, it took, as is typical in a contest like this, it took the last race. It took that Sabalenka race that we talked about with Joe Vellante, Joe's son, Kristen, Legion Racing, Legion Bloodstock, and very pleased to have a win picture from that race. Tom probably wants a win picture because it's the race that put him over the top. So not only does he win the day's prize, but he wins the overall prize, which means at the banquet at NHC, he'll get the championship belt. So happy to welcome Tom Rapps to the show and congratulate him on being the King of the Turf, wins the Kentucky Downs 3-day contest. Tom, well done.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you. I appreciate it. This opportunity is the third thing on my horse players bucket list, so I'm looking forward to it.
I love it. Did you play in all three of the days, or did you just have the opportunity to get going into the Sunday, you know, the third of the three?
No, I played in all three. You know, this is the first time I played in the Turf Challenge, but I did participate in all three, and you know, swung and missed on day one, and you know, took a big swing on day two. And you know, it's funny, I was just, you know, kind of thinking about it. I was kind of in a similar position on day two. I you know, had about 400 hours going into the last race, and then there was a late scratch, and I really panicked, and, you know, I tried to cancel all my bets so I could replace them, and I couldn't get them all in, and you know, I was left with $50. But I think if I would have had a little bit more time, I would have hit that exacta because I had those horses. But you know, lesson learned, you got to be prepared, I guess, right?
Always. Yeah. So how were you positioned going into Sunday? And of course, you know, it ends up being contest interruptus.
Right. So I you know, I tried to get off to an early start on Sunday and swung and missed on a couple races. And then, you know, didn't get off to the best of start, you know, after the rain delay on Tuesday. And basically I had $80 left going into the last four races. And, you know, I was struggling, and I want to thank Kate and Bradar for the tip on Donze Macareba. I think that's how you pronounce it. So I used that horse and a couple other horses in some daily doubles, and you know, it got to about $480 going into the last two races. And I told myself I wanted to, you know, really give myself a chance and you know, not leave anything on the table. So you know, I took that $480 and I put it into some daily doubles that I thought would give me a chance to, you know, to get to about $5,500. And so I had $275 on the Adventuring and Sabalenka, and you know, that was the winning combination.
Let's hear. I've got Sunday / Tuesday in front of me, and you mentioned, I guess it was a modest upset enough with Dance Macabre in the stake in the Untappable, because Alluring Angel, and frankly, if you know, Alluring Angel got off to a bad start and it sort of put her in a, you know, on her heels, but Dance Macabre was a little under 2-1, so paid $560. So you know, it's not a case, Tom, necessarily of, you know, finding 15-1 shots either. It's making the most of an opinion and, you know, and kind of hammering at it, and so then it you know, it puts you in position to then, you know, make some final moves, and those included now Adventuring. This was also a scenario where there was a mild, you know, kind of a mild upset. Adventuring, the Brad Cox Godolphin, beating Family Way, the Brendan Walsh, that went off at a little over 4-5, and Adventuring, you got 3-1. So how were you positioned in terms of the doubles? How were you positioned tying Adventuring into the nightcap?
Yeah, I put, you know, I put the majority of my money on Adventuring, the one horse. I thought that horse, you know, just from a pace standpoint, I thought, you know, might get off to an early lead, and I was hoping it would be able to hold it, and, you know, that turned out to be the case. And then, you know, then I had Sabalenka in the 12th, that was, or in the ninth race, that was, you know, so I probably had, you know, $275 of my $480 on that 1-12 combination. And I had a couple other backups in the ninth race, you know, just in case. And really my goal was to at least try to get an NHC or BCC, BCBC berth and try to finish in the top five. So, yeah, it was, you know, there weren't a lot of crazy upsets there in those last four races. They were,
no.
It was kind of formful. So, you know, I didn't think I could get it all back in one swing with $80. So,
amazing.
I tried to, you know, button single my way back to contention. So,
well, and there's a lot to be said for that. And I'm curious, how much did you adjust, and was there much of a shift in your approach or in terms of the handicapping from what was going on Saturday before we, you know, before it became obvious that they were going to have to cancel? And of course, the course was changing. And we talked extensively about it yesterday, about how, you know, once that rain cleared out on Sunday, you know, we had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, 85 degrees and sunny and perfect. So we knew the course was going to firm up. Did you make many adjustments from your thoughts on Sunday going in to what you did Tuesday?
You know, not really. I think that the biggest adjustment I made was in the sixth, and, you know, my confidence was a little shaken, you know, having, you know, swung and missed, you know, most of the day. So I did have Alluring Angel as my, you know, it's kind of my top pick, but I did, you know, call an audible and try to switch it up a little bit. And, you know, Kate and Bradar on TVG, she was picking up, she was on fire for a while. So I said, well, let me rely on her for a little bit of help and then use my own opinions in the last three races. So it
fabulous. Fabulous. Well, and that late double, the double tying Adventuring and Sabalenka, ends up paying $20.76. So you end up, I don't have the, I didn't see the press release. What did you end up with on the total?
I think I ended up with that. I think that paid like $5,500. I think, you know, roughly.
Wow.
Roughly. Yeah. So, yeah, there was a. You know, I haven't jumped that high since high school basketball. You know. So.
I love it. A couple of parts of this. Tom Raps is with us. Tom comes away with the Kentucky Downs Turf King of the Turf Challenge Championship, wins a BCBC seat, which, of course, is weeks away, really, and then gets, as well, the NHC seat and first opportunity at both of these. Talk, Tom, about your contest experiences up to date, now, and your handicapping methods, what you rely on, and obviously take some opinions, some public information opinions, and incorporate. But what's the handicapping method, first of all?
Yeah, I rely on DRF and the formulator. I just like that tool, and I've tried some other things. I'm kind of relatively new. I'm getting back into handicapping. I've kind of dabbled in it for a while, but you get busy with life and kids and chasing kids around to sporting events and things like that. But now that my wife and I are empty nesters, I've had a little bit more time on my hands to kind of dig back into that. So I've kind of gravitated to Formulator. But from a contest standpoint, I've dabbled a little bit online with tournaments at Horse Players, the Pick and Praise and things like that. But from a live money standpoint, just a few tournaments. I did participate in Keeneland. I won an entry to that, over the spring. I would say probably the third or fourth live money tournament. So.
Well, and what's interesting is you'll get to juxtapose the two granddaddies between the live money BCBC in November, and then coming to Vegas for the $2 mythical. So it tests both methods, both approaches.
Yeah. My wife and I, we were planning to go to the Breeders' Cup in Keeneland. We're living in suburban Cleveland, so it's it's a 7-hour drive, and so we were really looking forward to that. But now it's it's more of a business trip now, with the BCBC, and then certainly looking forward to getting to Vegas and meeting other horse players and having the opportunity to be in that room. I've watched that for the last couple of years, listened to your interviews, and it sounds like an opportunity of a lifetime, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Excited for you. Talk about your evolution as a player and as a fan, and you mentioned suburban Cleveland. How young were you when you took an interest in the game?
I grew up in northern Wisconsin, so we really didn't have any racetracks around. So my earliest recollections of horse racing are at the Bayfield County Fair with my grandmother sitting in the grandstands, and
wow.
I think the 4-H kids would parade their horses by, and then they didn't even have a starting gate. They would just have a race down the track, and we'd bet dollars. Pick horses and race dollars. But my first racetrack visit was Canterbury Downs. I was living in Minneapolis in the mid-80s. And I think the first race I went to, I had a buddy of mine who had a connection to Francis Gentner, and he said, come on and see this horse called Smile. So
we went
and saw that. So that that was my evolution. And then, this kind of, I go to the track once in a while just for fun with some friends, but just kind of picked it up again during COVID, watching online and things like that. So
well, from
from Iron River to Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, right.
Iron River, right, Bayfield?
Well, yeah. I'm impressed with your knowledge of geography.
Yeah. I love it. That's great.
A Canterbury Downs reference as opposed to park,
the early
incantation. If you were there, you probably saw Davidowitz. That was when Steve was.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned
court.
That. I think when I was dabbling with trying to learn a little bit more about racing, I bought his book Betting Thoroughbreds, and then was on the bookshelf, and I remember when I got back into it again here a couple of years ago, I pulled that out and reread it and reread it again, and it was really starting to make a little bit more sense as you really kind of get into it, and you couple that with listening to your show and all the things you learn from guys like Andy Serling and Nick Tamaro and Mig and thank you for what you do for the game. It really makes it enjoyable, and I travel quite a bit for work and listen to your podcasts on the airplane and while I'm driving as well.
Nice.
So thanks for keeping me company.
Well, that's very kind. I appreciate it, Tom. What do you do? What kind of work?
I'm in building product sales. So there's busy times right now with remodeling and new construction. A little hectic with supply chain challenges, but we're doing the best we can.
Well, one thing that'll alleviate a lot of that is winning things like the BCBC or the NHC.
Right.
I love it. What back to the handicapping side of thing, Tom Rapp's with us, who won the King of the Turf, the Kentucky Downs Challenge, and thanks to Brian Skirka for the great work again this year. Brian, he's basically a hired gun. He'll show up wherever you want to run a contest. For those of you, the racetrack operations that aren't involved in contest play, it's just a tremendous service to your players, and Brian will help you, as we've discussed before, including at Symposium. At University of Arizona, what's your favorite kind of play in terms of the race specific races? Obviously, this is turf, all turf. But when you're looking through PPs, what kind of race generally do you have the most confidence in yourself and your ability to read?
Yeah, I think the sprints on dirt, six furlongs and things like that, things that I really try to look for, a clear early pace advantage. Those are my favorite types of races where there's obviously a standout that has the early pace advantage. So I look for that. But I do like the unpredictability, I guess, of some of the turf and the opportunities for big payouts there. So I guess that's the gambling gene that I get from my mother, just the opportunity for a big score is what excites me there. But so I want to thank her for passing on that gambling gene.
Exactly. It's funny. My interest comes from my mother's side too, actually. Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Yeah. It's I told some friends and family about the win and really, they really don't understand it. I don't have a lot of friends that are horse players as well, or no one else in the family does that. But my wife is very supportive, so I want to give her a shout out. She enjoys going to the track and purchasing new hats.
I love it. Yeah, you mentioned the kids. How old are the kids? Are they? You got them interested?
I took my daughter lives out in Orange County, so we did have an opportunity to, last year we went to the Breeders' Cup together. That was, that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, the kids are, 31 to 27, four kids, really no interest in that. So that gambling gene didn't pass on to the kids. So I'll take it up for the cause for the family, I guess.
Well, and then, well, you are going to have to then turn around and get the grandchildren when they come.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Right, that'll be my contribution to passing it on. Yeah.
I love it. Well, Tom, I'm just absolutely thrilled for you, and well done. Look forward to seeing you maybe at Breeders' Cup, and being all week, and then obviously Vegas, which will be.
Yeah, look forward.
How
to
often
it, yeah.
are you Vegas regular at all, or
you know,
or
yeah, I've been out there several times for work, and then you know a couple times
conventions.
For fun. So
sure.
Yeah, conventions and things like that. So I haven't been there in a couple of years, so I'm looking forward to it, and planning on going out a few days early to kind of get acclimated and
smart.
We'll go from there. So, give me a call next time you're passing through Cleveland on your way to Kentucky or to any of those other points down south. So
you got it. Well, Sunday there'll be another stop at Country Made in Richland.
Yeah.
I'll be guaranteed on my way to Erie.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, there's good ice cream in Chagrin Falls over here too. So
Chagrin Falls, unbelievable. Yeah. That's great. My aunt, lived in Shaker when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
It's funny, for whatever reason, Cleveland is a town that I really rarely, even in my business career, I rarely got into Cleveland. I remember once we stayed right down on the water. And I can't even remember what that was.
Mm.
And I do tell, it sounds like you're old enough, close enough to my age to have grown up going to Tribe games and Municipal.
And Browns
games. But I always tell the story about taking the train to Chicago from Albany and waking up, the train jerked to a stop and waking up and I look out the window.
Yeah.
And there's the mistake on the lake. There's the Municipal Stadium staring me in the face.
Yeah.
It was very cool. I'll never forget that.
Yeah. Well, this is our year, you know, I got the Browns flag flying outside now and we're home opener this weekend, so we're gonna get after it. So maybe we'll see the Eagles
after
in the Super Bowl, right?
Well, there we go. I mean, I'm all for it. Count me in.
Yeah.
I'll take that right now.
Tom,
what about Twitter here? Can we find you on Twitter?
I follow everybody, but I'm not a, I kind of keep my comments to myself, so I really don't.
Well, I do.
I can't take criticism, right? You know?
It's an unusual format or forum, but I do see where you are, and so I'll be your second follower. All right.
Okay. All right.
I love it.
All right.
I love it.
All right.
Tom Rapps, everybody, and you're king of the turf at Kentucky Downs, and terrific score. BCBC seat, 10,000, and NHC seat as well. Tom, continued success, and we'll see you soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Tom Rapps, everybody, and that is great. That's great. From the wilds of northern Wisconsin to the heights of handicapping prowess. Love it.
Wouldn't it be great to be like Tom and not be a Twitter, aficionado? I feel like I always say if I, whenever I retire from this job here at Churchill Downs, I'm not going to, the first thing I'm going to do is delete my Twitter account.
I don't know. It is such a strange, there's moments where it makes you laugh your ass off. It can be hysterically funny. And then there's nastiness and awful. I mean, just bizarre behavior that you just shake your head. And then the funniest thing about the internet anyway is Kevin Kirstein, by the way, the voice you, the next voice you hear, as the saying goes, from the communications office of Churchill Downs, is that the people that you actually know in real life, and you see behavior from them, that they that you just know they would never be that way in person. And
no.
there's one guy, I'm not going to mention who it is. There's one guy I've known now for a long time through the show, and loves the bet and is involved in sports gaming. He's nasty as can be. He's just awful. And in person, it's delightful. It's the craziest thing.
I've gotten to the point where I get so many haters on my Twitter account. And look, my Twitter is sunrises, scratches, and cat pictures now. And it's like, and maybe some stakes fields here and there. So it's not like I'm posting, you know, crazy.
Controversial material.
Yeah, right. It's just, I'm still getting the haters. And I just keep a best of folder on my phone. So I screenshot them all. And I like to go back through them and do a best of. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's funny. I was driving up from Kentucky Downs yesterday, and Andy certainly called me. And, getting ready to go back to work today, obviously, and America's Day at the Races. That'll incorporate tonight's opening day card at Churchill. And Andy said, "Are you following this Jeopardy situation?" I said, what are you talking about? And, you know, Andy's a huge Jeopardy fan. And one of the things he always comments on Twitter, and it makes for fun discussions, is the way the finalists in Final Jeopardy, the way the players bet for Final Jeopardy. And as everywhere I go, there's Jennifer Hoyt. where did I see you? At the sale. I saw her at the sale the other day.
Yeah.
With Rolly, too. Rolly was in
town. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Got a couple of days off from his on-air responsibilities as an anchorman. He comments on it because it's as he says, it's the one area where finish. Obviously, if they hit daily doubles. But he apparently said, you know, the woman that, I don't know if she was the defending winner or what, but he said she made a mistake. Oh, there's Jason. Jason, we'll get you on, too. He makes a comment about, you know, the woman made a mistake and then did this and that. And he said he made the mistake of putting up, I guess, the Jeopardy hashtag on or something. And all of a sudden he got subtweeted and all these Jeopardy acolytes and these there's like literally, it's like a Greek chorus of Jeopardy, wild-eyed Jeopardy fans that defend anything Jeopardy related. And they've descended on Andy as if Andy isn't enough of a target for insanity. Now Jeopardy lovers are attacking him, and he's like, he said even the woman who made the bad bet, he said even she came out on her Twitter and said, "Ugh, I really botched my bet," and it's the craziest thing.
Keyboard warriors.
Unbelievable. Very funny. Well, listen, at the same time, it, you know, for our game, there's so many positive things that I maintain that the positive outweighs the negative. And I don't mean 51% to 49% either. It way outweighs.
Mm-hmm.
Basically we need to have important racing 7 days a week, because it seems like Mondays and Tuesdays, that's when people blow the turn.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, you've had the pent up aggression of the weekend, and depending on how Sunday goes for a lot of people's, you know, wagering accounts, if it's a, you know, a bad Sunday, they let it all hang out on Parks Monday and Tuesday.
Too funny. We're at Churchill Downs, and the tour continues. And in fact, the opportunity to launch this season. And it is, let's be honest, there is some frustration and consternation over the situation with the turf course. Actually, Ben Huffman right there, not that it's Ben's, not that, you know, not that Ben has any control over how the turf gets adjusted. But, I mean, let's get that elephant out of the room first, Kev, before we talk about what looks to be a very good start to the, you know, the, was it 17 days?
We're going to go 14.
14 days.
Yeah.
What's the thought on where we are with this turf course?
You know, there's all sorts of people that have way crazy job titles that I have no idea, you know, what to do with grass. You would not even imagine the type of people that have come in here and been, you know, consulting and looking over this turf course. You know, you've had ex-superintendents, you've had grass experts, you've had professors. The whole gamut has been in here to try and figure out this turf course. And it's just a new turf course that, you know, is taking more time than probably, you know, anyone could have anticipated it taking. And so dirt only for the September meet. Hopeful we can get back on there maybe in the fall. And so, you know, but the dirt only fields as tonight's card for the opening day program here at Churchill. It's, you know, 87 horses in the body of 8 races. So the entries, and I can hear the phones ringing in front of us for the entry clerks. Entries are coming in, you know, hot and heavy. And so, you know, it's, you know, as a horse player myself, as, you know, a lot of horsemen that listen to your show, it's frustrating for everyone, you know, management, horsemen, gamblers. It's, you know, it's not the best situation, but hopefully, you know, by the fall and then into the spring next year, everything is resolved and we're ready to go. It looks pretty green out there to me, but I don't know the first thing about grass. I can barely cut my own front lawn. So, you know, hopefully in the fall, when that kicks off in late October, we can, you know, get back on the lawn.
Well, that would be ideal. And in the meantime, the unique circumstance that that had the season at Kentucky Downs, these 7 cards that, you know, giving away outrageous amounts of money. So those 12 horse fields, almost, you know, per virtually every race nearly was a full field. And then all the dirt horses that were exiting Ellis and Saratoga and Colonial, they actually got a chance to get a freshening themselves over these last, give it, you know, 10, 12 days, let's say. And that partly explains how well-received the overnight was for today, tomorrow, and Saturday.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The first 3 days of the September meet, it's, you know, entries are flowing in. It's pretty amazing to believe this is the 10th year of the September meet here at Churchill Downs. You know, in previous years, Turfway had these dates, and we took over these dates in 2013, and, you know, it's just really flourished, and horsemen are, you know, very happy that they're able to stay home and, you know, get the full 8 months out of the year here in Louisville, and usually 4 months when they're out on the road. And so, yeah, tonight's program is really strong, and the backside is just filled with two-year-olds. You're going to see two-year-old races overfilling, splitting, I'm sure, later on into the September meet there. You know, there's probably 40% of the horse population back there are two-year-olds.
The action tonight, just to get this quickly, then we'll talk about the Saturday card, which is obviously the thing that we should be most excited about. But as it happens, this late pick 5 tonight, and the action starts at 5:00 Eastern, and the last race goes off at 8:23. So it's more like a twilight. It's not. This isn't a Downs After Dark.
It's officially deemed as Twilight Thursday. $2 beer, food trucks, live music. It'll be a fun night of racing.
Wow. I mentioned, and you were upstairs, but I did mention the mayhem that is going to be happening over the next, let's say, 96 hours. Because opening this afternoon and evening, football tomorrow night at Papa John's. Is it still Papa John's or is it something else now?
It's just officially Cardinal Stadium.
Cardinal Stadium.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There's concert. There's the big Saturday card here, obviously. What's the concert festival at the Kentucky Kingdom?
It's Chaos. It's called Bourbon and Beyond. And so this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, there's, you know, all sorts of concerts going on there. And then next weekend, it's called Louder Than Life. And, you know, I go to bed pretty early. And we can hear the windows shaking in our house because the stage sort of faces our neighborhood. And
how
so
funny.
We're about a mile away from the Fair and Expo Center, and you can hear the music loud and clear from a bedroom
wild.
Window. Yeah. So, but it's a crazy, you know, good time to be in the Ville.
Wow. All right. Well, tonight you got a sequence, Maiden 50 that starts off the late pick five. You got 12 and an AE. You got a two-year-old maiden special weight going a mile, and that's got 13 in it. Actually, 12. There's an entry technically, so really it's a 12-horse field. And then you come back with a 7-furlong non-winners of two lifetime for 100,000. The purse is actually 127,000, and optional claiming. And this has got a dozen. Then there's a third level allowance going 7/8, terrific for boys. That's got the likes of Hidden Scroll, and I didn't even realize he was still running. Gunnet,
he's back.
Unbelievable, right? Heart Rhythm, Major Fed in this race. I mean, this is sort of like a grade four assembly. by the way, third level allowance, $141,000 purse.
Yeah, thank you, Derby City Gaming.
Unbelievable. And then the 10,000 non-2 closes things out, also 7 furlongs. So the last three races, for those that like 7 furlongs, and there's plenty of people that like 7/8 as their handicapping sweet spot, you've got yourself a very attractive sequence. I'm going to, after the show, because things don't start till 5, after the show, I'm going to put up some thoughts on this sequence. Now, let's talk, more importantly, not that there's anything wrong with this sequence, let's talk about Saturday.
Let's talk about Saturday, huh?
Yeah.
It's this is the day that, these two next 2 days, Thursday and Friday, really is just sort of, the cocktail hour to really the stake central here Saturday with five stakes on the program, all stakes pick five, the kickoff to the Road to the Kentucky Derby, Road to the Kentucky Oaks. It's competitive races, not as full fields as we're seeing for Thursday in some of those stakes, but, I mean, this late pick five sequence, it's tough, and it's going to challenge a lot of gamblers out there, especially when it kicks off with the open mind, which... you see the likes of Bell's the One and Scotson, who have faced each other, so often. But Joyful Cadence is, just right there with them. And it's a tough race to kick off the late pick five sequence on Saturday.
Well, the key, of course, are the two-year-olds, and that's where the focus is going to be. And a confrontation, an early season confrontation that brings together two for two, Damon's Mound, the Girvin, the horse that moved Girvin from Florida to Kentucky, essentially. Damon's Mound and Michelle Lovell, seeing if we can turn the summer of Lovell into the autumn of Lovell. And the confrontation between Damon's Mound and Echo Again, the smashing debut winner at the Spa, the worst-kept secret in Saratoga history, when this one finally debuted.
Have you heard about this one before, the debut?
It's unbelievable. This horse, honestly, the meet hadn't started yet. And when I did the show the Wednesday, the day before the meet opened, and Blue, Leon Blue, and one of the first things he says is, Aspison's got himself an absolute freak, a freak, I'm telling you. The meet hadn't started yet, I heard about Echo Again.
He was this year's version of Jack Christopher. Jack Christopher was that last year.
Unbelievable. So Echo Again, and of course Marty McGee is going. I haven't looked at picks yet, and well, it's too early. But Marty, he will be very intrigued by the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear for Echo Again.
The only issue that I usually have with two-year-olds that break from that far outside is sometimes they, tend to go outwards. Because
yes,
there's no friends to their outside.
Well, they go to open space. Horses
so,
go to open space.
But, there's no horses that are better schooled at the gate than Steve Aspison horses. It's just, no horseman, I think, is better at schooling their horse in the gate than Steve Aspison. It's a fun race. And Echo Again actually trying to do the same route that Major General did, who won last year's Iroquois. He really, sort of...
Forgot about Major General.
He didn't pan out into much, but, he broke his maiden at the same 6.5-furlong maiden special weight at Saratoga and then came back and won the Iroquois by a neck.
Interesting.
And so it's, the same sort of path that he took last year to win the Iroquois.
Very notable, too, that Curly Jack shows up here. This was a horse that Tom Amos had entered at Kentucky Downs and bypassed that spot for this. And this is a good magic colt, and out of the Roman ruler mare, Connie and Michael, who, if I'm not mistaken, was Dominic Galusio. It was Dominic Schettino, I think, had Connie and Michael. I believe... I'm going to have to go look that up, but I think I haven't seen her name in a long time. But this for Michael McLaughlin, Curly Jack, coming out of the juvenile at Ellis and competed against Mo Strike in the Sanford at the beginning of the Saratoga season, was a winner at First Asking here at Churchill as well. So here's a horse that actually has already won at Churchill, which certainly notable. And, of course, Damon's Mound did the same exact thing. And if we're looking for horses in this Iroquois that have already gone two turns, nobody has gone a full two turns. However, McPeak down on the rail with the Dixiana Homebred by Connect out of Plaid, the deputy commander mare, and Hayes Strike broke the maiden on that dog leg Ellis Park mile, similar to the Wilson Chute configuration at Saratoga. And McPeak also has a first out winner in an off the turf race from July, a sharp Azteca colt named Honed, that actually may have been the first of the those sharp Aztecas that won. So you do have two horses that have won at a mile, and curiously both trained by Kenny McPeak, that Jace's Road for the Alba family and West Point. The quality road was a $510,000 purchase at Keeneland last year, a debut winner at Ellis going six under Joe Talamo, but he gives way to Florent Giroux in this spot. But all eyes on Damon's Mound. You tweeted this morning, 5-2, second choice for Damon's Mound, 2-1 for Echo again. And
then Jace's Road is the third choice at 7-2. And Joe Talamo, I believe, is up at Woodbine riding up there this weekend. And so he went up to ride, I think, for Paolo up there, and Flo's going to take over the mound on Jace's Road. The Owlballs have won the Iroquois three times.
With Dale.
Yeah, with Dale. Dennis's Moment, not this time. So they know how to win this race, and it's a very, you know, from a gambling perspective, as you mentioned, you know, only those two horses for the McPeak stablemates have gone that, you know, turn and a half or the turn and a hook at Ellis. And so, you know, which one of these horses will handle that two-turn distance? It's the true test, and it kicks off the road to the Derby, just, you know, getting horses started. And 27 horses have competed in the Kentucky Derby that have run in the Iroquois. Midnight Bourbon, one of them, looking at Lee, too. So Steve Aspison has had some success of starting his, you know, top Derby prospects in the Iroquois and then have gone on to run in the Kentucky Derby in May.
Well, there's not necessarily as much obvious firepower or name recognition necessarily in the Pocahontas, but we certainly got to mention that Dwayne Lucas, who had a terrific Saratoga, a resurgent Lucas Barn, and Wayne was shopping book one. I can tell you that because I saw him go by a few times on Monday and Tuesday, but Naughty Gal shows up here after not really a terrific effort in the spinaway, where basically set the pace and dropped anchor, essentially, beaten 20. But Naughty Gal, the Into Mischief in here for Holy Cow Stables. And there was also, I think, a stake winner I saw on page two. Yeah, the debutante winner for John Ortiz, Just a Warrior for Stonebridge Farm, the Justify Philly that actually was a modest Keeneland purchase, all things considered, $150,000, 2-for-2 with 60, mid-60 and upper-60 buyers at Ellis. And here again, we look around for horses that might have gone two turns. Friendly Persuasion for Michael W. McCarthy, the Arrogate Filly for BG Stables that was bred by the Malones, Bridalwood Farm. And also Jet Setting, Brad Cox, an Ellis Mile winner upon introduction as well. And so is Sarah Hamilton shows up, needs some money, a Street Sense Filly. She won the mile at Ellis. And that seems to be the Norm Cassie, another Ellis winner. South Lawn for Bat Masterson, a Windstar Pioneer of the Nile bred. So there's a little bit more route experience here. Only one horse that's actually gone two turns successfully. Ricky Corville has got Out of Nothing at All. This is a Cypress Creek runner that has been passed back and forth between he and Deodoro.
Yeah, you've mentioned the Ellis Park name quite a bit, and Ellis has had a great two-year-old program, and a lot of the two-year-olds have stayed here at Churchill Downs to prepare and have run down the summer at Ellis to get ready for the September and the fall here, both here and at Keeneland. And so, you know, the two-year-old program was very strong this summer at Ellis, which sort of just leads to believe, you know, how strong it could be here in the fall. And so Just a Warrior, who won that Ellis Park debutante, is the 4-1 morning line favorite in the Pocahontas, very tepid favorite. South Lawn for Norm Cassie is 5-1. Going through the field, Grand Love 9-2, and then Naughty Gal is 5-1. So it's a very competitive running on paper of the Pocahontas, and that closes things out on Saturday is race number 11, 5:58 post time. And so it's a very tough race to close out that pick five sequence when you can have a 4-1 morning line choice.
Don't want to miss an opportunity to cite the return of one of the great rivalries. And again, nothing, you can't create rivalries. Rivalries have to grow organically, like that of Bell's the One and Sconson, and Club Car turns up for KK Ball and Ben Colebrook. A five-horse field for the open mind, but frankly, all anybody's interested in is Sconson and Bell's the One.
Round eight between these two mares going against one another, and you know, as Neil Pessin told me after they ran here in the late attack in August, he said no one sort of seems to show Bell's the One any respect when she comes up and jumps up and wins. And Sconson was the 4-5 favorite that day, and Bell's the One came up and won, and Sconson finished a disappointing fourth. And so it's fun seeing these two mares go head-to-head one another. That kicks off that late pick five sequence, and, you know, if you get bounced out of there and you can wheel back in that late pick four.
There's also, of course, the Locust Grove, and there is the Louisville Thoroughbred Society group that has got kind of a familiar set of veteran runners. Manny Wah shows up in here. AC Expressway, who scratched yesterday out of Kentucky Downs.
How many times have you been on the AC Expressway?
Not as much as you'd think, actually.
Yeah.
Not from that. No, not. I mean, maybe three or four times. Philly, you know, heading in that direction.
Mm.
Not that much.
I've been on it way more than that.
AC's not big on my. I remember going early on.
Yeah.
And. I don't know. Subsequently a couple more times, and it just, I don't know. I found it a little disheartening.
AC doesn't do it for me, but I'm stuck on the AC Expressway to go south to Ocean City and Cape May. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, and Johnny D listening, and Johnny could regale us with AC Expressway
yeah, right.
stories. How about Isolate in here, too? Necker Island, another one that scratched from Saturday at Kentucky Downs for this spot in the Louisville Thoroughbred Society. So a absolutely terrific Saturday slate to really put the spurs to the brief but important early season action at Churchill Downs. Inside Churchill Downs tomorrow night?
We actually get the night off because of the Louisville football game.
Oh, so the radio station's covering the game.
Got the game, and I think all the producers want to go to the game.
Oh, I see.
You know, we're sort of screwed on that.
All right.
So we get the week off of Inside Churchill Downs, and then we get to come back next week. You know, the fun thing about the September meet, I want to, you know, we've got Oaklawn waiting in the wings, Steve. I don't know if this is, you know, Oaklawn waiting in the wings at Churchill. This doesn't seem right. But the fun part about the September meet is with the Breeders' Cup being at Keeneland this year, there are so many horses that are using these races here in September to then catapult to go to Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, keep an eye on the September meet because it's really going to give you a preview of these last horses preps to go into the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody, Horse Racing KK on your Twitter dial, and normally Fridays with Travis and Scott Shapiro and Darren Rogers for Inside Churchill Downs that will resume next Friday.
Next Friday, we will be back in the studio. We have our summer home out at Double Dogs where we did our Derby preview show, and we spent the summer out there. And
nice.
Now we're stuck going in the studio because Ben Huffman's writing 10 race cards on Fridays, and we can't get over to Double Dogs in time after we've done the finale here. So we've got to go to the studio.
Too funny. Horse Racing KK, everybody. Kevin Kirstein now with two children. Are you coming under the knife now? Has she had enough?
So when we left the hospital on, I guess we left Friday night, I told every single nurse, I hope I never see you again. I hope I never see you again. And then I look over at Allison, and she's giving me the eye roll. So I don't know. It's not up to me.
Uh-oh. All right. All right.
I hope so, but it's not up to me.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody. Thanks, KK.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
I love it. We're going to stay right here. We'll take one break this morning, Casey, at the bottom of the hour. So we'll do two 90-minute segments. And we got a unique opportunity because, as mentioned, you've got the Oaklawn team that is around. And Jason, come sit down. And it's funny. I see you as much at other racetracks as I do at Hot Springs, kind of crazily. A lot of fun, and just, you know, KK, one of my absolute favorite people. And somehow we didn't talk Eagle football, which is unusual that we would that we would have that long of a conversation, and the birds didn't really come up. That's kind of funny.
And we play against you Monday night. I'm a Vikings fan.
Oh, boy. So, all right. So we're in trouble.
I may have just ended this conversation quick.
Jason Bagram joining us from Oaklawn. And this is a perfect scenario because we're trying to recruit and get people involved to, you know, consider some stalls and to take up residence this winter at Oaklawn. It's closer than you think.
Yes, stable area will open November 1st. And,
wow.
And training starts November 5th. And opening day is December 9th. And we'll run through May 6th.
Well,
so that's it. That's it in a nutshell.
There you go. There's a fabulous adjustment, not to the schedule per se, although the schedule has been tweaked. But I mean a bonus for trainers and owners that needs to be advertised and publicized. I really have not seen much about it. And in fact, Jennifer Hoyt mentioned it to me when I ran into her at the sale on Tuesday.
Yeah. So it's a trainer bonus. So for trainers that start a horse between December 9th and April 2nd, or could earn up to a $200 bonus per starter. And then after April 2nd through May 6th, they can earn $250 per start for those horses that finish fourth or lower. But the contingency is they must start two horses within the last 9 days of the race meet.
Let's run this through again.
So kind of stay till May.
Stay until May is sort of the overwrap. All trainers who stay until May receive a bonus based on the number of non-stake starters at the meet. Start two horses during the final 14 days, including one horse during the final nine, to receive the bonus. December 9th to April 2nd, $200 per non-stake starter that finishes fourth
or lower,
down to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then April 7th, it kicks up through May 6th, through closing day, it kicks up to $250 per non-stake starter, fourth and beyond. And you know, this has been used effectively at some other places. Yes. Monmouth had one a few years ago.
I think Colonial had one this year.
Nice.
I believe Churchill has one in place now.
How about that?
So,
well, and this can add up. I mean, it's a nice little incentive, and especially. And that's not to say, by the way, that you finish fourth and fifth with $100,000 purses.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah, $90,000 maiden special weights and allowance races will be $104,000 plus.
Well, the average daily purse is going to be over $735,000.
Yes.
The average daily purse.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's 68 days this year. Also, that's a little change. And one little change we did is the start is we're given a week between Churchill's fall meet and our meet. Because last year we started like within 4 days. So it was kind of tough to get people to get down there with travel arrangements. So like I said, so Churchill in the Thanksgiving weekend. So we'll have 10 days before we start. So I think that's going to also help the horsemen as well.
Jason, in terms of anybody that hasn't already applied for stalls, how are you fixed for stall space?
You know, our stall apps are due October 13th. So, you know, once we hit that point, we'll know more about where we're at and, you know, see what kind of new names pop up. And, you know, we'll start assigning stalls and sending out those invites.
You can email racing@oaklawn.com. You can call the office, 501-363-4300, 501-363-4300. Certainly, a lot of you have Jason Milligan's phone number, I'm sure, or Pat Pope's number. And if you're, you know.
The one other change is we've added 9 stakes races to our schedule this year.
Let's talk about those, too.
So we've gone, we now have 45 stakes races for a total of like $13.5 million. For just the stakes races alone. So last year we had 36 stakes races, and so our program is continuing to improve, and we're just continuing to ride that wave.
Just looking at the schedule, actually, for the three-year-old program, the Rebel is February 25th, the Arkansas Derby April 1st. The other big grade one, obviously, the Apple Blossom April 15th, the Oaklawn Handicap a week later. And I mean, it's still the racing festival of the South. It's just a little bit, you know, reconfigured, kind of spread over 3 weekends, right, or even 4. Looks like the Arkansas bred program is getting a little bit of a boost.
We're seeing a lot of the breeding, like you're seeing some Arkansas breds that are bred by Kentucky stallions, basically. So you're seeing them switch back and forth every other year. So it is picking up. The other thing that's not on there is we're still planning our Hall of Fame Day, Hall of Fame trainers, Hall of Fame jockeys there March 18th, that weekend. So we look forward to that. Last year we tried it in April. We tried it in April, but we learned that it was too close to the Triple Crown for those trainers that, you know, possibly have potential candidates.
Yeah.
They don't want to be away from the horses, which is very, very understandable. So we're trying it in March this year. So we're looking forward to that. And we hope to build on that success because we felt like for the first year it was a success.
That's the weekend of the Essex leading into the Oaklawn Handicap, the Whitmore course as well, mm-hmm. also known as the Ron Moquette, March 18th. I'm trying to think if I could be there, but I think that's the Vegas. I think that's when we got to be in Vegas for the NHC.
Is the NHC that weekend?
I think it is. Let me see.
I always get confused because it used to be the end of January early February.
Asked NTRA if they would consider a move, okay. And apparently it's been well received. Interestingly. I take that back. The NHC is the week before, is the 10th, 11th, and 12th. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm in the midst of trying to work out my travel for the spring.
I may have filled in a little blank for you.
Possibly. Interesting. I've got to figure out because some things are. I don't know. For some reason, it's an awkward, not awkward calendar, but it's a calendar that is requiring a little bit more strategic planning,
sure.
Because of the NHC situation.
Right.
Because normally that's a period where I'm swinging through. New Orleans, Risen Star weekend. The Risen Star Rebel has been a very strong
weekend
thing for me and last year,
right.
I had so much fun,
right.
with driving from New Orleans up to Hot Springs we also had to spend 2 weekends because we had the HBPA convention.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And so we stayed, I think I got hammered through the meet because it was, I was there for like 13 days. And so he was delighted.
He probably charged you half his rent.
He may have. pretty funny. The whole thing starts with the Advent Stakes, all those Christmas stakes that were named last year, the Advent, the Mistletoe, the Ring the Bell. That's a new one, right?
Yeah, that one is because that's kind of our alert to thoroughbred aftercare. So we have a promotion that we started last year. We have a big bell on our winner's circle. So if an owner wants to contribute $100 or more to the thoroughbred aftercare, they get a Ring the Bell. So I thought that was a great
really
stakes
cool.
name. So
that's great.
So we've tried to incorporate that stakes name with and doing it early in the meet to make that awareness early in the meet.
Oh, that's terrific. And that will get, we'll make sure to get all the aftercare, the TAA, everybody involved. And that's a nicely done. Then the tinsel, the poinsettia, the renaissance, the year end, then the three-year-old start on January 1st with the Smarty Jones and all the traditional, the Pippin, the fifth season, the American Beauty, the Southwest comes around at the end of January. The Martha Washington, the King Cotton, the Biakoa gets the road to the Apple Blossom started as well. The Dixie Belle, the Razorback, et cetera. There we go. Everything you're familiar with. And then you've kind of filled out some at the end of the meet as well.
And we used a lot of those stakes names come from popular hot springs, local destinations. So we
Bathhouse Row.
Yes. So
Valley of the Vapors is cute.
Lake Washita, Lake Hamilton,
yep.
The two biggest lakes in the area.
Nice.
So, like I said, we try to incorporate the city with what we do.
Well, they're synonymous. Hot Springs and Oak Lawn, make your plans, everybody. And the season will start December 9th and goes to Derby Day.
May 6th.
And looking forward, as always, to getting back. And Jason, this was perfect timing. You wandered right into the buzzsaw.
That's how it works. Best plans are never
are no plans.
Are never scheduled. So.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Jason Milligan, everybody, and Oak Lawn, and looking forward to getting back. Looking forward to the second half of this morning's get-together at the races. We're live at Churchill Downs. Going to catch up with Pat McKenna. Opening day, of course, at Belmont at Aqueduct. We'll talk to Joe Clancy and Bill Gallo, because jump races, including the Lonesome Glory, you've got both of the biggest stars in the jump game running today in Ozone Park. An amazing situation that brings jump racing back to the Big A for the first time in close to a half century. Yeah, very cool. And
I had no idea.
Not since the 70s. And so we'll get Bill to reflect on that. Joe Clancy, Pat McKenna in this half hour. Top of hour three, we'll check in with David Hill. Speaking of Hot Springs.
There you go.
These days, I think it's safe to say that Dave is the biggest star in the Hot Springs galaxy these days.
Maybe.
Who else? Who else we got? With the sports star or two?
Well, I mean, honestly, everybody still talks about Terry Wallace.
I'm not going to argue. Yeah. I'm not going to argue about Terry. I love it. Dave Hill at 11 as well. We'll get into week two of the NFL, the lead correspondent now of the New York Times.
Go Vikes.
Listen, we're in bad shape. Back after this, the Churchill Downs. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Specifically for horse racing, Naira Betts. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Betts. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to make...